for mean, I'm about to mean, for the mean. Usually they reject. Well, sure, no one.
I don't think so.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the City Council Chambers. Today is Wednesday, July 13th. It's 9:30 a.m. Good morning, Carla. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine.
Would you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Adams?
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed, beginning with communications. Can you please read the title for communications item 702?
Request of Arthur Llewellyn to address council regarding transportation and park issues.
Mr. Llewellyn, welcome back. Go ahead and have a seat. She'll take care of passing them out, I promise.
Good morning, Council. I'm waiting for these pamphlets to be handed out there. I have one new one to submit regarding the Columbia River Crossing Project. It's this color rendition, an artist's rendition of what the proposed spaghetti, I will like to call it, ramp system for Hayden Island would look like. And I think it's a better rendition, so I put it together to portray its impacts. And alongside it is the alternative that I believe really needs to be reconsidered, brought back to the table, because it has lower impacts, because, first of all, it's a public safety concern. I see the Concept D spaghetti ramp system for Hayden Island as dangerous. Therefore, it should not be accepted by the city. It should not. It's just simply too dangerous. And it has other problems along with it that make it not the ideal, especially when you consider this alternative that came up alongside it just a year ago. Points that I try to make in other submissions written, I won't be able to do it in less than 2 minutes now, but I want to submit it into the record and considered. I don't believe that the project is ready to go at all. They are saying a year and a half. I just don't believe it. And I'm not worried about it. I think that project can be put on hold for many more years than that. And Oregon has construction projects that are more worthy and ready to go. And the Columbia River Crossing project is just substandard. It's far below the standards that we should be meeting as a city. On the corner of the one in particular I mentioned, there is a drawing. I just want to highlight it and make sure it's looked at along with. It's my own little design for dealing with access from Marine Drive. Let me see if I can just read in the 30 seconds left a part of my testimony that I wanted to read. I've been an advocate for streetcars and since 95, and light rail since 92 after reading Al Gore's Earth in the Balance. Title of my submission was Parks and Transit and the Columbia River Crossing Project. May I finish? I'll just wrap it up. The park proposal that I wanted to mention in the title of the park was for the South Waterfront. And it's that double block between I-5 and the main new park that's there. I think that's a block that really needs to be finished in that district in order for it to blossom. And I suggest that the center part of that double block, it's two blocks, be dedicated to park space, the center of it, as a gesture to the Lair Hill community on the hillside, so that rather than seeing some building on the edge of the freeway in front of the between the freeway and the waterfront and the district, that it opens up that central new park for that community's view as a gesture for them and to be able to go forward with that project. So, sorry, I'm 3 minutes. It's not enough time for me to say everything I wanted to say, but thank you, Council.
Thank you, Mr. Willen. Appreciate it. Always good to hear you. Hear from you. Can you please read the title for communications, item number 703?
Request of Arn Strasser to address Council regarding July 4th fireworks in Portland neighborhoods.
Mr. Strasser, welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate the City Council allowing me to address the issue of July 4th fireworks in Portland neighborhoods. Perhaps someone would say, why would you take the City Council's valuable time to talk about fireworks? After all, it's only really bad for a night, and then just off and on for a week before and after the 4th. Let people have their fun. When I told my 80-year-old neighbor, Mrs. Johnson, that I was going to take 3 minutes and talk to the City Council about fireworks, she just rolled her eyes. Oh, those fireworks, she said. They scare the heck out of me. I turn the TV way up loud and even the air conditioning, and it doesn't do any good. God, I get scared. Well, I said, I only have 3 minutes. Well, she answered, get their attention, you hear? So, for Mrs. Johnson, I'd like to talk about fireworks. And for my cat, Musette, too. All July 4th evening, she hid under the bed with eyes as big as saucers. And for the dogs, too. Many who shake and shiver all night and can't be left alone, and some who have to be tranquilized. So, for the cats and dogs and wild birds and creatures, let's talk about fireworks. And how about those of us who had to go to work the next morning and were kept up past midnight, sometimes until 2 a.m. and even later? We hope you won't mind if we take these 3 minutes to get grumpy about fireworks. I'm not talking about every neighborhood, of course, and I'm not talking about legal fireworks. In my neighborhood in Northeast Portland, we're talking an artillery soundtrack. Not fireworks, really, but explosions. These explosions begin about 9 o'clock and go past midnight, setting off car alarms, scaring 80-year-old women, and keeping us up at night resistant to earplugs and pillows. We know these illegal fireworks are dangerous. This July 4th, a commercial building on Alberta caught fire when a failed illegal firework landed on its roof and was put out after the second alarm and cost $100,000 in damages. On the streets of our densely populated Portland neighborhoods, isn't it possible that the next time a house might be hit? Or, as in my neighborhood, one of the bicyclists who were riding the streets during the heaviest onslaught? We also know that the city is aware of this danger and trying to control it. Fire Marshal Jansen sent out an eloquent appeal to Portland community members to be good neighbors and to curtail illegal fireworks activity. Obviously, the experience in my neighborhood and the experience of many people in other neighborhoods is that those setting off huge firework explosions don't give much thought about being good neighbors or weren't affected by promised extra police and fire department patrols. I think it's important to realize how few people are really involved in illegal fireworks. At about 10 o'clock, when I looked down the streets of my neighborhood, it wasn't the scene of families and kids setting off fireworks on the streets. There was a small group down the street, including kids, having a wonderful time setting off huge fireworks, but the rest of the neighborhood was eerily quiet, with people hunkered down in their houses waiting for the explosions to end. So what should we do, or should we do anything? There are those who view regulating illegal fireworks to be another example of an overbearing government taking away individual rights. Clearly, these issues bring up the issue of finding a balance between individual rights and the peace and safety of the community. So, yes, I do think we should do something. Here are some suggestions the council might consider. One, set a curfew. A 10 or 11 p.m. curfew seems to be a good beginning to regulating the fireworks issue. Two, get Portland neighborhoods more involved. The noise and disruption of illegal fireworks is a neighborhood issue. Some neighborhoods are more affected than others. Neighborhood associations need to empower neighbors to monitor for illegal fireworks and increase their efforts to promote a safe July 4th. Three, create a designated fireworks hotline. A fireworks hotline would help identify troubled areas and send fire department officials to investigate. Portlanders are reluctant to call the police non-emergency number to report on their neighbors. 4, consider setting up a citizens task force on neighborhood fireworks. Ask a task force to monitor July 4th fireworks next year and to report to the council. Finally, the degree to which illegal fireworks have become a problem is inconsistent with Portland's reputation as a progressive, livable city. Illegal fireworks create an environment of chaos and fear, use costly emergency services, and create tension between neighbors. Let's hope we can make July 4th a happy and enjoyable time for all of us, including my neighbor, Mrs. Johnson. Thank you.
Well, sir, I want to thank you for your thoughtful communications and make sure we have a copy of it. And because you invoked Mrs. Johnson's name, you got 5 minutes, not 3.
Tell her she made a difference.
She made a difference already. All right, that gets us to the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any items from the consent agenda?
I'd like to pull 718.
718. Okay. 718 is pulled, and what do you want to do with it, just for consideration?
Questions. Questions, yeah.
Okay. Any other items to be pulled? All right. Then please call the vote on the consent agenda.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. That gets us to the regular agenda. Can you please read the titles for 7, 24, 25, and 26?
724. Sorry. Authorized application to the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance for a grant in the amount of $648,238 for the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Program, fiscal year 2011, local solicitation to prevent or reduce crime and violence. 725, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the City of Gresham for the use of the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, fiscal year 2011, Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Program funds for law enforcement, prosecution, prevention, education, and technology programs. And 726, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County for the use of the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, fiscal year 2011, Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Program funds for law enforcement, prosecution, prevention, education, and technology programs.
Hi, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Bob Delgazy, Business Operations Manager for the Police Bureau, and I have a short statement to read related to the application for this grant. The Police Bureau wishes to apply to the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Administration for the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Program, fiscal year 2011, local solicitation to prevent or reduce crime and violence. This public body review, governing body review, of the grant application for the related and the related intergovernmental agreements, which are on the following two items, also provides an opportunity for public comment and involvement. This is satisfies a solicitation requirement for the Justice Assistance Grant. The Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Program funds will be made under disparate certification to the City of Portland, Multnomah County, and the City of Gresham. The Justice Assistance Grant solicitation requires the City to submit a joint application for the aggregate eligible allocation to all disparate municipalities, and also to act as the fiscal agent for the grant. Intergovernmental agreements must be executed with Multnomah County and the City of Gresham in order to obligate agency roles, responsibilities, and this is addressed in items 725 and 726. The aggregate amount of the Justice Assistance Grant solicitation is $648,238. There is no match requirement for this grant. The applications allocated as follows. City of Portland will receive $320,852. Multnomah County will receive $252,099. And the City of Gresham will receive $75,287. Portland Police Bureau will use $320,852 in Justice Assistance Grant funding for the following four items. First is to hire one full-time equivalent management analyst for 12 months to ensure city compliance with outside audit recommendations and to ensure bureau compliance and documentation of internal review recommendations at a total cost of $83,955. The second is to retain one full-time equivalent police administrative support specialist to support the police bureau's detective division at a cost of $66,730. The fourth item is to purchase protective gear and safety equipment for Bureau law enforcement personnel. The Bureau will purchase 48 National Institute of Justice compliant tactical ballistic vests at a total cost of $30,167. Fourth and final item will be to contract with a local treatment provider to coordinate treatment, temporary housing, counseling, and training opportunities for individuals involved in prostitution-related offenses at a cost of $140,000. This will be a component of East Precinct's Prostitution Coordination Team, which is a multidisciplinary partnership that includes police, parole and probation officers, the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, and local treatment providers. With respect to Multnomah County, it will use $252,099 in Justice Assistance Grant funding for the following three items. First is to hire 0.72 FTE for a neighborhood deputy district attorney for 12 months at a total cost of $84,033. The second will be to hire 0.74 FTE parole and probation officer for 12 months at a total cost of $84,033. Third would be to hire 0.62 full-time equivalent corrections deputy for 12 months at a total cost of $84,033. Finally, the City of Gresham will use $75,287 in Justice Assistance Grant funding to hire a property evidence technician for 12 months. At this point, I'm open for any of your questions or questions and comments from the public.
Any discussion from council?
Yeah, I guess, Bob, so you said $80,000 is for a management analyst to do, is that a management analyst to ensure compliance with the grant?
This analyst will be assigned to the Professional Standards Division, and it will be related to recommendations for the Bureau as well as internal review processes for the Bureau.
Okay, thanks.
And I just say that that position and this grant continues at a very important time, given the recommendations that we're looking forward to out of the U.S. Department of Justice's review of the Bureau,
right.
Civil Rights Division.
And this is related to that.
Anyone wish to testify? Commander, could you come forward a second? So after how many years in the Bureau?
29 and a half, sir.
After 29 and a half years of fantastic service to the people of Portland, Commander Walker is retiring. And I wanted to take this opportunity on behalf of the entire city and City Council to thank you for your almost three decades of service, and especially underscore the work that you've done to bring equity of service to East Portland, to work on a number of really difficult vice crimes, including the most recent great effort around human sex trafficking. We're very grateful for your service, and we wish you all the best in your retirement.
Well, thank you, Mayor, and it really has been a privilege and an honor to serve the citizens of Portland for nearly 30 years. It's been a great opportunity for me, and it is with great regret that I do have to retire, but 30 years of service is long enough, but it really has been a pleasure being here. It's been a pleasure working with several council members over the years, so I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Well, happy retirement.
Do you have anybody coming up after you in your family?
My son currently works for the Clark County Sheriff's Department. I has worked for them for 14 years, and I have a son-in-law who works for Clackamas County Sheriff's Office as well.
So I do think it's important to point out that he is the son of former Chief Dick Walker, who is a good friend of mine and equally as respected, so it's good the tradition continues. Thank you.
I hope they'll consider lateral transfers to Portland. Yeah. We have a position.
Now that Dad's gone.
Yeah. I tried several times.
thank you for your service and dedication.
Thank you, Commander Walker.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Does anyone wish to testify in these matters? Carla, can you please just call the vote on all three, one by one?
724, Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Mayor, I appreciate you putting this on the regular agenda, not only to thank Commander Walker, but also to explain to citizens how we get some of the money that then goes out to the other jurisdictions and why we pay for some of the work that gets done at Multnomah County. So that was a really good explanation. And I also want to compliment the Police Bureau on the public involvement. What is it called? Public involvement assessment that's now required on every council item. You did a really nice job of explaining what the public involvement was and how public was involved in this grant application. And so I really appreciate that. Thank you. Aye.
Adams.
Again, thank you. Thank you. Aye. Your last city council appearance is almost over.
725. Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 725 is approved. 726.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 726 is approved. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Can you please read the titles for 727, 728, 729, 730, 731?
727, amend code to improve coordination of the city emergency management system. 728, adopt revisions to the basic emergency operations plan. 729, adopt 2011 alert and warning annex. 730, adopt the 2011 flood response appendix. And 731, adopt a 2011 terrorism appendix.
So we have a number of amendments as a reminder to folks that are following these items and my colleagues. We had three hearings. This will be our third hearing. And I described that we would have three hearings so that we could do amendments and outreach for the entire 3-4 weeks. And that today I would therefore move, though, to attach emergencies to each of these so that, having had 3-4 weeks of hearing, that we could then move to implementation. So I'm going to do that piece first of attaching the emergency clauses so that that's the basis for our discussions. So I move that we attach the emergency clause to 727.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion to attach the emergency clause to 727?
Aye.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Getting used to that new order, aren't you? I move to attach the emergency.
That was handed out yesterday in the Tuesday memo. I'll get you a copy.
Thanks for double-checking. Move attach the emergency clause to 728.
Second.
Those are resolutions, so they can be voted on immediately. And they're effective immediately once they're passed.
Okay, all of those are?
Yes, they're all.
Great. Whew, I thought we had to do it for all of them. All right. Director Merlo.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioners.
Excuse me, Carmen. Did you want to do the Exhibit A amendment?
We're going to do a whole bunch of amendments now. Okay. Yeah, that was just the first step.
Okay, good morning. Carmen Merlo, Portland Office of Emergency Management. Since last week, we've got several new amendments that I'd like to go over with you, and I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for pointing one very important one out to us. So very briefly, we put back in one of my powers that we inadvertently cut out when we did the initial code changes, and that is the Bureau Director's ability to reassign employees to the Emergency Coordination Center during an emergency event. We added another responsibility of the office to evaluate the effectiveness of the city's response to an emergency event. And then the biggest changes have to do with the lines of succession to the mayor during an emergency. We had it just a little bit wrong in code earlier. So the way it used to read was if the mayor was unavailable, then his duties would go to the president of the council, then to the council member that formerly served as the president of the council, then to the member, the commissioner, holding the lowest number. That wasn't exactly right. The way it should read, according to code, is going from the president of the council to the council member who previously served as the president of the council, and then to each successive person who formerly served as the president of the council before reverting to the commissioner with the lowest number. So we corrected that in this section of the code. We additionally provided for further succession planning in the event all those people were unavailable. And so following charter, the next in line would be the city auditor, the city attorney, the CAO, then it would be the executive assistant to the mayor, then the executive assistants to council members based on their seniority as an executive assistant, and then finally reverting to bureau directors with the largest bureau based on the number of full-time employees. So it's a mouthful.
Yeah.
So if we lose both buildings and a couple more, we have a succession plan.
Right.
Right.
Pretty deep.
Deep succession plan. So these are amendments to which item?
So these are the code changes both to Title III and Title 15. These are
all contained in 727?
Yes.
Okay. Are there more amendments we're doing today to 727?
Those are the new amendments since last week.
So I move the amendments as offices have received and underline and strike out.
Second.
So moved and seconded. Discussion. Carly, can you, anyone wish to testify on the motion? Carly, can you please call the vote on the motion?
Zaltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I very much appreciate Director Merlo coming over to my office with City Attorney's Office, Ellen Osinak, to work through all of the issues, and it was a very collaborative and helpful process. Thank you, Carmen. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. All right. Are there other amendments to any other items before us? So is there anyone that wishes to testify today on any of the items between calendar 727 and 731? Please come forward. Just give us your name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mayor and Council members. My name is Joshua Patterson, and I am a member of Internal Communications on the Steering Committee for the Neighborhood Emergency Teams. I just wanted to take less than 3 minutes to say thank you for all of your hard work, and thank you to Carmen Morello for making our Neighborhood Emergency Teams and our emergency management operations for the City of Portland such a priority. And it's good as a citizen to know that our city is so focused on protecting its citizens in the event of emergency. Thank you.
Thanks for your continued and the entire NET team's continued volunteer efforts to keep us prepared and safe. All right, then let's just roll through the vote, starting with 727.
Well, before we do that, was there going to be an update on 731, the terrorism?
So I did talk with Ellen Osinak. We don't feel that there's really anything to change in the appendix as a result of council decision to rejoin the terrorism task force. So.
Okay. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Well, thank you, Mayor, for taking the time to allow these details to be worked out. Aye.
Adams.
Happy to. Aye. 728.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Approved. 729.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
And I want to add my thanks to the NET team members. Thank you for being here again today. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 729.
That was 729.
730. I liked it so much I wanted to vote on it twice.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 730 is approved. 731.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 731 is approved. 732. That's it. Congratulations. And there's a new hire. Do you want to announce the new hire?
I do. Could you come up here? Thank you, Mayor.
Point of personal privilege.
I wanted to thank you, Mayor, for reminding me. I wanted to introduce to you a very familiar face to all of you, but now a new face to Poem. Randy Neves is our new public information officer. So.
That's wonderful.
Good job.
Welcome.
Thanks for having us. I'm looking forward to it.
Welcome to the team.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. That gets us to, please read the title and call the vote for 732.
732, authorize a letter of agreement with the City of Portland Professional Employees Association that amends the July 1, 2010 to June 30, 2013 labor agreement between the parties. Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 732 is approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote for second reading, 733.
Authorize a contract and provide for payment for the construction of the Southeast 12th and Gideon Sewer Reconstruction Project number E08661. Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 733 is approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance, council item number 734.
Amend contract with Shearer and Associates, Inc. to increase compensation and increase the scope of work for the Burlingame Tanks Improvement Projects.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
David Schaff.
Director Schaff.
And you're going to set me up?
Yep.
Okay. Good morning. I'm David Schaff, Administrator of the Portland Water Bureau, and I believe, based on what you just did, somewhere between 25th and 30th in the line of succession. With me are Chief Engineer Mike Stuhr and Keith Walker, Program Manager for tanks and pump stations here in the Portland Water Bureau. Thank you. The ordinance, and today is my first ever PowerPoint presentation to you too, so this is a big day. The ordinance that we have for your consideration today is to amend the contract with Shearer and Associates to increase compensation, increase the scope of work for our Burlingame Tanks Improvement Project. Now, the reason I'm making this formal presentation, including a PowerPoint presentation, is because this is change order number 5, and because the cost and scope of this project has increased significantly since we first started in 2009, and we wanted to walk you through why that's the case. So Burlingame Tanks 2, 3, and 4 were built in 1943, 1951, and 1958, respectively. They're fed from the Fulton Pump Station down near the banks of the Willamette River up to the storage complex that's located near Wilson High School. Water is distributed from the Burlingame complex to the majority of southwest Portland, either by a direct supply from the tanks themselves or by feeding additional storage tanks. So they're a critical piece of our infrastructure. We entered into a contract with Shearer and Associates for just over $638,000 in November of 2009 for work on these on the three tanks that are there. The original scope of the project included a number of things. That was to replace the existing steel roofs on tanks 2 and 3 with aluminum ones, strip the interior of the shell of all three of the tanks to bare metal above the existing lining and repaint, strip the interior roof of tank 4 to bare metal and repaint the exterior of all three tanks after spot treatment, replace the interior platforms inside all three of the tanks. So you get to these tanks from an outside ladder, which you'll see in a little while, and then there are platforms that connect the three tanks together. So there's just one exterior ladder on the inside. Then to get on the inside of the tank, there's an interior platform near the roof of the tank. So that's one of the items that was part of the original contract was to replace those interior platforms. And you'll understand why I'm talking about them in a minute. And then to replace the tank safety features such as the fall arrest systems, the railings, and upper connecting platforms. Again, when our people are either on top of the tanks or inside the tanks, they are harnessed into fall arrest. Systems that prevent them from or protect them in the event of an accident, a slip, a fall, that sort of thing. And then we were also going to install new instrumentation and cathodic protection for all three of the tanks. So the scope of the work was based on an evaluation that was conducted in 2005 by a design consultant as part of our Burlingame Service Area Master Plan. As a result of that evaluation, we decided to replace the roofs of tanks 2 and 3. We didn't note any structural defects for tank number 4. We considered doing an additional evaluation of the condition of the steel of the tanks during the design phase, but we decided against that because due to the perceived low risk that additional structural defects would be discovered and the high cost of doing such an evaluation. So during that 2005 evaluation, we noted that the interior platforms that I just mentioned and the fall rest anchors had all deteriorated to the point that they were not safe to use anymore. Therefore, any other additional evaluation on the interior of the tanks would have required us to drain them to erect scaffolding inside the tanks at a fairly significant cost, estimated to be around $100,000. So we didn't do that. So we get through the contract for $638,000. The first change order was addressing a minor safety issue for $455. Change order 2 was fairly significant. And we brought that to you in April of 2010 to replace the roof and the upper 8 feet of the shell of tank 4, which we discovered to have significant deterioration after we erected the scaffolding on the inside. Let's see if I can figure this out. Okay. So these are pictures of the interior condition of tank number 4 during the 2005 evaluation. And you can see why we decided that the paint needed to be replaced on the roof. However, once we got the scaffolding, once we got the scaffolding installed, and you can see that in the upper left-hand picture on the interior, we were able to determine that since 2005, the paint has completely failed and the steel is deteriorating. If you look down at the lower right-hand corner picture, the steel at the roof connection to the steel walls of the tank are badly corroded and unsound. So we made the decision and change order number 2 to replace the roof of the tank. And you can see how big these tanks are by looking at this picture with the crane removing the top of tank number 4. I counted the rings, and there, I think, are 10 rings of scaffolding, and I'm guessing they're around 7 feet, 8 feet, something like that?
All tanks are about 70 feet tall.
Okay. So we're talking about a tank that's fairly tall. So the cost of this change was $371,000, or 58% of the original contract, and it required your approval. Now, we made the decision then to have the extra work done by our contractor through a change order, primarily because of the operational risks of having these tanks out of service for a longer period of time. Remember, these tanks are a necessary part of our distribution system that needed to be back in service as quickly as possible before we began our peak demand season in the summer. In addition, we thought it would be more cost-effective than terminating the contract and rebidding the increased scope of work. And continuing with the original scope of work, just painting the roof of Tank 4 wouldn't have made any sense because it had to be replaced. And it was going to have a significant cost and associated with erecting scaffolding, which would be utilized for the extra work. So that was change order number 2. Change order number 3 came after draining and erecting the scaffolding inside tank number 3. We discovered that the upper 4 feet of the sidewall of the tank had deteriorated and needed to be replaced. And you can see that in the upper left-hand corner picture where the steel at the top connection to the tank is badly corroded. And then if you look at the one in the lower right-hand corner.
That's a screwdriver through
yes,
the wall
is,
of
it
the
is
tank.
Indeed. Through the top of the tank. So it had corroded to the point where that top 4 feet of tank number 3 had to be replaced. That change order was approved by the council in October of last year and was primarily for replacing those top 4 feet of tank 3, replacing the grout at the base of the two of the tanks, installing interior ladders in all of the tanks, and a variety of other things, including a contingency for things that we might find in tank number 2 that we weren't that we may not be aware of.
May I just ask a question about that?
Sure.
If the top 4 feet is corroded, how do we know that if we drained it and tried to stick a screwdriver through further down that it wouldn't be bad also?
Well, at this point, the tank is drained, and we were going through the inspections of the entire front, inside and outside of all of the tanks.
Why would it corrode more at the top rather than where the water is?
Because it's open to the atmosphere, and I'm going to let Keith add.
That's okay. That's a good enough
okay.
answer.
Okay. Chlorine and ammonia are fairly corrosive, and that's where the corrosion is going to occur at the top when it's gaseous.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. So that was change order number three. Change order four was a simple order that added 23 days of contract time, but no additional compensation. So the purpose of change order five and why we're here today, as part of the exterior repainting in the original contract, spot repair was going to be required where the existing paint had failed down to the steel prior, or the existing coating had failed down to the steel prior to repainting the entire tank. We estimated that that was going to be approximately 15% of the area of the tanks. The actual required spot treatment you can see is significantly more than that. It's the purple areas that you see on the tanks. And the negotiated change order for this one is approximately $41,000 of the original contract. However, we are only seeking authorization for $11,788.85 because the rest is covered by contingencies. And then what you see is the tanks in their new pristine condition with new aluminum roofs, new exterior ladders. You can see in the right-hand picture there's a person on the platform that connects two of the tanks, and there's another one on the other one. And then new fall arrest, new interior platforms, and basically those tanks are good to go for a number of decades, for a number of more decades. The total change orders for this project add up to $583,000, or 91% of the original contract. Almost all of the changes were the result of the differing site conditions that we discovered when we got the scaffolding up inside the tanks and outside the tanks. Only just over $8,000 of the final cost were owner-elected changes, or 1.3% of the original contract. So we'll be returning to council in approximately a month after this change order takes effect with a report to council to authorize final payment for the project, but that will be submitted via consent agenda. I won't go through this briefing all over again. Now, notwithstanding this particular project, our total historical change order rate is about 11%, which is pretty good. Excluding differing site conditions like those that we've been dealing with this project, the change order rate is actually only about 4%. In other words, the majority of change orders that we would bring to you that occur or that we have to bring to you are driven by what we find when we really begin a project. We own a total of 58 storage tanks, of which 25 are steel tanks like these. We performed a condition assessment in 2006. 11 of those steel tanks have had exterior inspections in the past year. Of those, 4 tanks have had interior assessments performed within the past 3 years. Inspections of all 25 steel tanks will occur in-house on a 5-year rotating basis, concurrent with when we clean them. One tank that was constructed in 1942, it's the Council Crest tank, was built around the same time as Burlingame Tank Number 2. It has essentially the same construction and requires similar improvements to Burlingame, the Burlingame tank, so we'll be coming forward with a project on that soon. And then 2 of our tanks are going to be replaced with pump station improvements and will be taken out of service. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them, and if I can't answer them, Mike or Keith should be able to.
So I have a question. Obviously, this is this type of backlog of corrosion and maintenance has been around a while. So ideally, for the Burlingame tank, for example, just to educate myself, was there something that, so it's gone on for decades, but is there something early on that could have prevented that and that we're doing now to prevent that in the future?
I think the biggest thing early on, this is kind of a, you know, you've got a judgment call here on whether you want to build the scaffolding and dump the tank and put it in there to do the assessments. And in the main, if you've kept your inspections up and so on, you should usually see what you need to see. Generally, we do projects like this based on estimating factors for what kind of stuff you expect to find, and they're generally pretty accurate. To me, in a way, this is kind of a good news story. In 2005, we started off on our asset management plan. I think we've acknowledged in the past that we weren't doing enough in the routine maintenance world, and we've been stepping carefully through preparing asset management plans on all of our types of assets, including the steel tanks, and stepping out and doing the assessments. I think what David mentioned in the beginning, and you may or may not have caught, is we're going to start doing these assessments when we take the tanks down for cleaning, which we do every 5 years, and get in there and have a look. But we probably still won't erect scaffolding and so on because it's really pricey. And in the main, most of the time, the estimating factors for this type of work are fairly accurate. And in the end, it ends up being cheaper to use your estimating factors and then be prepared with a contingency. When we let these kind of contracts, they're priced in what's called unit pricing, price per square foot to do a patch, price per square foot to fix a weld, so on and so forth. So we have a contractor right there who can do it. In this case, we were lucky. We had a really good contractor there who was experienced in lifting roofs. And I would hope that with our new program, I don't think we'll go through this again. I hope.
So the screwdriver test isn't a standard operating procedure?
No, but it's good for photos.
Yeah, it's good for
me. It will now be.
So I was just curious, roughly where are the Burlingame tanks?
Top of the mountain up there, on top of the hill.
It's within a couple blocks of Wilson High School. I can't tell you what street they are.
I know where they are.
I think it's southwest of
your house.
Yeah, southwest.
When you're at Wilson, you can see them.
Yeah.
And one of the other things that we probably didn't talk about as much is that from an operational point of view, we don't want these tanks empty in the summer. We run full all the time in the summer just to keep water supplied up on top of West Hills. So we're very careful and very cautious about when we take them down and how long they can be down.
So just a bigger context, make sure that the public can connect some dots. So since 2005, when council started pushing all bureaus to really work on the life cycle, to go out and sort of look inch by inch, in addition to sort of the formulas for being able to calculate, because a lot of your stuff is underground. You don't want to dig it up to look to see if it's okay. But since 2005, when we've started doing more of the life cycle cost analysis, this is an example of, you said, that. It, in turn, is one of the drivers of why we have to raise rates to get on top of what has been a maintenance backlog in water. And the life cycle cost analysis allows us to be more precise about doing that in a smart manner, but it has found a maintenance backlog. Is that true?
Yes, and even though a lot of our material is underground and hard to look at, we will do asset management plans on some of our critical infrastructure. So, for instance, that transmission pipe that goes under I-5 up to the hill, We've actually looked at that one. We haven't looked at the one on my street that was laid in 1910 because it's not a particularly critical infrastructure. When it fails, we'll go in and fix it. But otherwise, we're not going to be digging that one up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is the first reading. Would anyone like to testify on this matter? All right. Unless there's additional council discussion, this moves to second reading next week. We'll now take the pulled item off of the consent agenda. Can you please read that item?
718. Amend contract with Environmental Systems Research Institute, Inc. for geographical information, system software maintenance, and technical support through June 30, 2014, and increased by $817,000.
What are we looking at? Director Moody.
Christine Moody, Procurement Services. Portland City Code 5.33D12 allows the city to renew existing contracts for information technology software maintenance without competitive solicitation, where the maintenance can be obtained from the city's current provider in order to utilize the pre-existing knowledge of the vendor regarding the specifics of the software system. In 1998, the Information Technology Executive Committee recommended the city move to a standardized geographic information system environment for the city's enterprise GIS. The Environmental Systems Research Institute software product was determined by the committee to be the right tool for the city's enterprise GIS system, and at that time, City Council granted approval to enter into a contract with ESRI. Subsequently, in 2006 and 2009, City Council approved amendments to the ESRI contract for continued maintenance, support, and licensing. Today, you have before you an ordinance recommending an amendment to Environmental Systems Research Institute contract to allow for an additional 3 years of software maintenance, technical support, and continued enterprise licensing for the city's GIS system. The amount for the three-year extension is $817,000, and the source of funding is the Bureau of Technology Services operating budget. Rick Schulte from BTS is here to answer any technical questions.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Well, thanks. I guess the reason I had pulled this just because I was concerned about sort of the pattern of large renewals of the contract, but I guess this is a software license in essence. I mean, how much of this $817,000 is for the licensing?
It's a unique licensing agreement in which we have unlimited use of their entire product suite. We can deploy as many licenses as we want without incurring additional cost. So it includes the usage of additional licenses. It includes the maintenance of the software, upgrades, and ongoing support. So it's an all-encompassing enterprise license agreement that allows all bureaus freely to use all the technology that they have within their bureaus and their business.
And so not like I'm cheering for more software projects, but did we look at the beginning of each three-year renewal period? Do we look to see whether there might be another provider? Or
yes, I mean, as Christine mentioned, this is our ongoing Third Amendment, and so at the end of each contract, we reevaluate the industry, the standards that are out there, and renegotiate too based on our levels of usage, and renegotiate the price. So we do that. We take that opportunity at each juncture. Since 1999, when the city began and standardized on ESRI software in the GIS community, over the course of the last 10 years, that standard has been adopted across the country, most federal, state, and local agencies. And here in the region, the state of Oregon in 2008 entered into declared ESRI its standard for the state of Oregon. They are also now have an enterprise license agreement with them, as well as all of our neighboring jurisdictions, including Metro, Multnomah County, Clackamas County, Washington County, Clark County. Everybody has standardized on this product, which allows us good interoperability between us and in various jurisdictions.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Those are good answers. Thanks.
Let's see. Was this an emergency or non-emergency? Yes.
Emergency.
Okay. Can you please call the vote?
Saltzman?
Well, thank you very much for the answers. I appreciate it. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Approved. We are in recess until 2 p.m. Where we have two items.